Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to The Matchmaker Is In. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Ewan Poon, the president and co-founder of Spin. Ewan, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, the big news today is Spin is finally in business in San Francisco. It is a bike-sharing platform, the first approved dockless bike-sharing scheme in San Francisco. So, tell us the story of what inspired you to start Spin and why San Francisco?
So the company is based in San Francisco. We're actually launching in South San Francisco at first, where today marks the first time a stationless bike share system is launched in the Bay Area, so not San Francisco proper just yet, although that's coming up soon. What motivated me was, I think it was a lot of a personal desire to have this system in our backyard of Soma, actually. I think it stems from a personal experience of using, you know, bike share systems around the world in London and other cities in New York, and realizing the shortfalls of station-based bike share, coupled with a trip last year. I spent a decent amount of the year in parts of China and other cities in Asia, and got a chance to use some of the systems there that have been popping up, Mobike and Ofo, and got real familiar and with the use cases of the product, and really opened my eyes to what this stationless model could do for users in dense urban areas. Got the inspiration to call up a couple of old friends of mine, Derek and Zhuang, and Derek had been at Lyft, and I knew you'd be passionate about this concept as well. At the time, I was working in venture capital, so it made sort of a very interesting trio, and we decided to just tackle this head on, and it's been lightning speed, really. I mean, my first messages to Derek were in December, and we basically got the crew together, and so far it's been a whirlwind fun ride. It's been an incredible reception as we start to learn how to, I think, basically bring this concept to North American cities and make cities and the people within it and the businesses within it aware of what this kind of concept is all about and how to fit this in within the contours of local regulations and local business policies and local users' habits.
You know, it's interesting, having spoken to the Mobike guys, and obviously you spent a lot of time in China, so you understand it really well. I mean, this is a really viable alternative to commuting, but also an environmental necessity, really, when you think about all of the smog and pollution that cars spew out in a very, very crowded city environment. But it was that the same motivation for you? Is the San Francisco area kind of a bike commuting friendly place?
Well, it's becoming more and more so, and that's something that we're advocating for. I think that as a company, we believe there's certainly more bike-friendly infrastructure and more bike lanes that benefits all bikers, including our business. Being environmentally friendly is a huge plus, and I think that as we, you know, grow up, and as I imagine what the city that I live in is going to look like in 10 to 20 years or so, I certainly want a pretty healthy environment for myself. And having spent, you know, some time in some of the in Beijing, I certainly would not want that kind of air quality in right. My own backyard. And taking proactive steps and having the chance to now with the technology in place, you know, bring this mode of urban transportation at some sort of seemingly a perfect time was a strong motivating factor for us.
I'm talking to you from Boston, which is a very bike-friendly town, and in fact, there's been a lot of recent legislation where bike lanes are seriously enforced, and if you happen to pull into a bike lane, even if you're a taxi to let off a passenger, you can be ticketed. So there's a lot of infrastructure, as you alluded to, that make it safer for individuals to choose to commute via bike to the office or on errands, et cetera. How important is that to really expand your business, and does San Francisco have similar plans in place?
Yeah, I think that, all cities in the U.S., I think the recent number was $1 billion getting spent by U.S. cities on improving bike infrastructure. There's a large, strong movement in San Francisco by the cyclists, which we're backing some of these efforts and creating protected bike lanes and In the end, I think that basically, I think the more demand and the more, it's sort of this cycle. We have, the more bikers that we have, the safer everyone is because drivers are just more aware of it. And then I think we'll see more politicians be amenable to investing in more bike infrastructure because they see more of their constituents kind of be on bike. So
the one of the challenges that the Mobike team faced, and they have some clever ways that they solve for it, is getting the right number of bikes in the right places so that everyone who wants a bike can get a bike. How are you thinking about solving for that?
So that's a purely data game. I think gathering, it is a pretty fascinating challenge for us and something that intrigued our team. Me and myself and my co-founders were all software engineers by training. And so this naturally, piqued up our curiosity as a data challenge. We basically know when, where people are using the bikes, where are they dropping them off, where they're opening up the app, where they want the bikes. And it's a matter of us actually, we have a rebalancing operations. That's a big part of our business, not just having the bikes, but having a fleet of basically sprinter vans and people that we have on the ground. I guess akin to how Uber has employs drivers.
Yep.
We have a fleet of contract workers who go around and move bikes in the middle of the night or at off-peak times during the day. And it's a similar system employed by a lot of the bike share systems already, the station-based bike share systems have this, and we're constantly seeking new ways of making this more efficient and looking for interesting technologies that can help us keep up with the demand.
Yeah, I think the dockless solution is really good because the docking stations take up so much room and parking, which of course in every city is at a premium, but everybody gets pretty grumpy in Boston when they see the docking stations for bikes because they'd really like to park there instead. But I think it's a very clever solution. Are you using some of the same technology that the Mobike guys are doing? Did you develop this yourself? How did you guys develop the platform?
So we develop our own stack from the bikes. Some of the things may end up being similar kind of components, but we use GPS-enabled smart locks on all our bikes, so we know where they are at all times. We have a custom-designed bike that we've put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in making sure that it's kind of great for bike share at the same time, emphasis on being light and being fast. We want to make it a very easy urban... We designed it for an urban commute, not necessarily a three-hour ride around. I think our average in Seattle was around 16 minutes for a ride, which is at least still a little bit on the higher side. In fact, we might see that come down as more and more people discover new use cases for a short bike ride, just to get around town, go check out a new coffee shop, or check out a new store, meet up with friends in another neighborhood. We want to see this more and more of these casual use cases pop up.
What's interesting about those use cases is, so let's say I'm pedaling away and I've checked out this coffee shop, I've put my bike aside, and I've gone in to get coffee, and then someone else has taken it, and now I have to find another bike. I guess these are all just natural consequences and frictions that need to be worked out until greater density in certain neighborhoods is.
Oh, that's something that our product is going to solve. In fact, we've seen that use case, heard that from people quite a bunch in terms of a feature request, and that's easy for us to implement on the software stack. Easy, roughly speaking, we still have a small team, but it's something that we're going to get to pretty soon, the ability to reserve a bike, when you're
right.
Really stopping off. In fact, stopping off at a cafe or going by to eat, that's, I think, we're scratching the surface of the potential of our platform. I think that Lyft recently announced something with Taco Bell stopping by a Taco Bell on the way back. But on a bike, I think that's what I think as a platform, we're having people mobile in cities, and we have the ability to drive them to local retailers, and we're starting to scratch the surface. I think today we're announcing a partnership with the Halal Guys franchise in Seattle. The pretty popular outlet there that, in conjunction with their opening, basically all riders who ride a spin bike over and scan a QR code at the counter once they place their order, get their ride rebated, and first time riders, I think, get $5 back. So $5 in spin credit anyway. So we're actively growing our network. We have a partnership with Timbuktu over there where if you ride a spin bike over, you get 10% off your purchase at the store if you make one within the next 30 minutes. So it's pretty exciting what we're doing with local retailers and being able to use our mode of transportation to drive more foot traffic into them. And I think more and more retailers understand but the power of this, I think it's going to quickly grow our business.
So I wanted to ask you about the user profile. So I would imagine that, you know, kind of hardcore bikers would have their own bike and they figured out where to lock it up during the day when they're commuting. Are you seeing that the profile of the spin customer is someone who used to take public transportation or perhaps walked, and now that a bike is available for them that they don't have to buy and own and store at their residence, this has now opened up opportunities for them to consider it as a way to get to work?
So, I mean, the spin bike is not designed to be stored at your residence. So I think that in many cases, what we've seen from users is they would still have their own bike as a commuter. They would bike into their office, but within the urban environment, getting around in that last, in sort of the playpen of a downtown core, if you will. And I think that's where we see the big use cases and keeping their, you know, nice bike locked up in the office while they daunt around town. And I think that's what we imagine as a great use case, or getting from endpoints of public transportation, those like a light rail station or a subway station, to their final destination. I think that's where we see the strongest use cases.
Yeah, no, I know that the spin bike isn't designed to be taken inside. It's sort of left outside for others to be able to use. But my question was more about whether these are cyclists that have their own bikes and either didn't think to use them to commute to the office, or people that have done other things to get to the office and now have an option without having to buy and own a bike that they can take advantage of that.
I think it's both, actually. We've seen a strong uptake from very passionate cyclists and very casual riders as well. People, you know, I'm actually counting myself in the non, you know, super cyclist demographic. I mean, I've had bikes before, and I'm a pretty casual bike rider. I don't go out on actually don't go on bike races or anything like that. Yet I've bought bikes before, only unfortunately get them stolen, right around my office or my home, and experience the pain point firsthand of needing to care for and maintain for a bike. And that's part of why we kind of ended up starting the company. We view the bike as a great great product for getting around town, but ultimately it's about getting people around, not necessarily just the bike itself, and not necessarily just appealing to typical previous bike commuters.
So how do you guys make money?
It's pretty simple, actually. We charge $1 every 30 minutes, and that's all done via an app. You link up your credit card or Apple Pay, and you walk up to a bike, scan it with a QR code reader, which is embedded in our app, and start billing you for that. So it's a pretty simple business model. We charge typically like any kind of rideshare service. We just charge the users directly.
Do you have a minimum? Is the minimum $1? Because if you said the average ride is 16 minutes, you're making 50 cents.
Right. The minimum is $1. We kind of tested that around, and folks have thought it was a pretty fair price, and that's in contrast to a lot of the traditional station-based bike share systems. Obviously, I think most station-based bike share systems have around a daily pass concept of around $10 or so, followed by a monthly or an annual pass. And we don't force any of that. We've announced a spin unlimited program, which gets people in a monthly ride for $29 a month. But that's not forced. That you can just sign up. In fact, we don't even require you to create an account. You just put in your credit card and you can start riding right away. And people have really appreciated that. We haven't yet imposed this deposit mechanism. We obviously host a user's credit card for verification and for loss prevention. But we basically charge it all right now, and we're actively exploring different partnerships and different ways of additional monetization as well.
Yeah, no, I was gonna ask about that since it sounds like this is not, unless it operates at massive scale, enough to probably cover your cost. I mean, there has to be other partnerships that you can leverage to monetize the scheme.
Definitely, I think that's a pretty exciting part of the business. It's opening. I mean, obviously, at a baseline level, there is a business here. We're charging, users for using our service. But at the same time, there's really interesting, exciting possibilities.
How do you decide where to open next? So Seattle first, San Francisco or south of San Francisco second, but how do you decide locations and what goes into making those decisions?
Right. So we've actually launched, well, in between Seattle and San Francisco, we actually launched a soft launch Dallas mm-hmm. last weekend as well, which brings me out to Texas, actually. We decide locations based on working with the city governments, their receptiveness to us rolling out this program, and also based on the demographics of the city itself. Is there a kind of a strong enough urban population? Do we see a use case? Do we see an interesting, downtown area that people want to jump around in? And I think that in most kind of dense urban metros, the answer is yes. And for us, we've been kind of deluged with a lot of requests now, starting with after we kind of broke ground in Seattle and showed that this actually, is a great, way for cities to bring in bike share. We've been getting a steady inbound request from cities who want us to get, come to them. And now we're basically kind of triaging and filtering based on what we think the usage would be like in the city. Obviously, density is a critical factor for us.
Yep. Now, are you replacing, when these governments call you, are you replacing an existing bike sharing scheme, or are you the first?
So, in Seattle, it was a very interesting kind of experience for us. We came in right when their existing station-based bike share basically was folding, or had just yep. folded, a system called Pronto, which was paid for by the government. And that's a very interesting note. Most previous bike share systems were sold to governments. We come in and take nothing from local governments. We basically ask for permission and we craft a permit. In fact, in Seattle, we're paying a fee to the government for each bike that we mm-hmm. place on the street. So it's a very interesting kind of arrangement. And I think there'll probably be a transition period where, obviously the cities without existing bike share solution, Dallas for one, are pretty excited to have private companies come, like ourselves, come in and offer something to them, basically within a week or so at no cost to them. So that naturally is a first kind of, but cities are also looking to augment their existing, station-based systems. Certainly the geographic reach of the station-based system is pretty limited and based on the infrastructure that's present. And we're quickly showing basically that our job is to basically show why this is a better solution for ultimately the users. I think that's what we care about as a startup company. I think we always go back to the old mantra of kind of listening to our users, and we're building a product not for not just for, servicing a contract or whatnot. We ultimately, care about our users, which also kind of extend to the local government.
So do you manufacture your own bikes? I mean, the Mobike guys talk a lot about these bikes have an incredible shelf life of 3 to 4 years or more. What about yours?
We do the same, and we optimistically target that as well. I think that we obviously don't have 3 to 4 years of road testing yet.
Right.
That's what we're looking at. That
right.
And,
right.
I mean, there are things like theft and loss that come into play that reduce the effective kind of shelf life of our bike. But that's we're certainly making durable road bike share worthy products, and part of that includes some innovations like a solid foam tire, so that we don't actually need to go out there and actually, you know, refill air or anything like that, and an anti-theft feature that we're sort of iterating and improving on as we see, you know, experience out in the real world. It's fun when because the proverbial rubber meets the road, and we see what happens to our bikes on the street, right? We have our first fleet of 500 plus now out in Seattle, and we're just listening to reports, and there's all sorts of fun things that come in, and over time we're just going to be iterating and working with our supply chain that we've built up to come up with better products to basically be more roadworthy and actually more comfortable for our users to ride.
How many bikes have you had stolen?
We actually haven't released that number. It's not that many, thankfully. We certainly don't encourage it. No more than a handful, actually. I think most of the people have been pretty respectful of the bikes themselves. I think we've had a couple incidents of vandalism, unfortunately, but that's kind of to be expected with any, you know, new property. But ultimately, I think, you know, it's not too dissimilar from leaving your own, say, your own car on the street. I think that with any kind of new system, you'll have some unwanted attention, but as more and more people get used to it and more people kind of, it kind of fades into the fabric of a city, it's sort of more, it just becomes another thing. And certainly, like, leaving bikes in public place, not a new thing anyway, so.
Right. Well, listen, Ewan, thank you so much for giving your time today. It was fascinating to learn about Spin and what your plans are for it. It sounds tremendous. I'll be looking for it in Boston soon, hopefully. Come to Boston. We're a bike-friendly
city. Will do. Will do, definitely.
All right. Thanks, Ewan. I'll talk to you.